The peso touches a new intraday low of 59 to the greenback. ICC prosecutor Karim Khan pushes for the resumption of the ICC's probe into the drug war killings in the Philippines. We'll discuss that with a lawyer for some of the victims' families, attorney Christina Conti. A new storm developing outside of Luzon, parts of which are still reeling from Typhoon Karding. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Deadline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, the Philippine peso has depreciated to a new intraday low of 59 to the U.S. dollar from its all-time lowest close of 58.99 on Tuesday. The peso firmed up slightly to 58.95 when trading open today, but now it continues to lose ground against the greenback. The local currency has already weakened by 15% against the U.S. dollar since trading at 59.99 at the end of 2021. Philippine businesses, both big and small, are already feeling the pinch of the peso slide against the U.S. dollar, and they are in for more pain, as many expect the demand for the greenback to remain high, propped up by the hawkish Federal Reserve, Warren de Guzman reports.
Mark Hill Fajardo's motorcycle shop has become a microcosm of the Philippines and the impact of the strong U.S. dollar on Filipino business. Because imported goods are purchased in dollars, they've become more expensive, and Fajardo has had no choice but to buy less stock. From 500,000 pesos worth of inventory, it's now down to 300,000. He can't pass on the added cost because his customers earn in peso.
Langis, gulong, alas lahat po, di nagagalaw po yung mga produkto.
Mark Hill is concerned his suppliers, who import directly, are in trouble, as many of their customers are taking the same approach to survive the weak peso. Many do not expect the U.S. dollar to weaken anytime soon, as the U.S. Federal Reserve is expected to continue aggressively hiking interest rates to beat down inflation in America.
As the U.S. Tightens, and the Fed has signaled that it will continue to tighten until inflation is brought under control, that will clearly have an impact on the peso. I mean, the dollar is very strong. Interest rates are very high in the U.S. So capital is going to flow to the U.S. So, you know, and we've seen that already in some of the currencies, in emerging market currencies, where currencies have depreciated, and peso is no different.
Very sharp currency depreciation will continue.
Jonas Ravelas, Managing Director at E-Management for Business and Marketing Services, says based on history, the U.S. Federal Reserve will have to raise interest rates higher than inflation, which means it has a long way to go, and we should all brace for more pain. Union Bank Chief Economist Carlos Unshon says because of the uncertainty in monetary policy and the consequent volatility in foreign exchange and capital markets, Filipino business owners like Mark Hill are being forced to scale down or shelve expansion plans. As more businesses do this, growth will slow down. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank both expect the Philippine economy to grow by 6.5% this year, the low end of the Marcos administration's own forecast. They both expect even slower growth in 2023.
We will have to see about that. The forecast, our economic managers forecast a higher growth. So they are in a much better position to make that determination in that forecast. Our fundamentals are strong. The economy is in a good resurgence, and we are experiencing a good rate of growth right now.
Nevertheless, the Philippine economy is looking much rosier compared to other economies that are more export-driven. The World Bank in particular expects the weak peso to bring more foreign tourists into the Philippines where they can get more bang for their buck. Warren de Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
President Marcos led the grand opening of the new terminal building of the Clark International Airport. Our very own Joyce Balancho is there, and she now joins us with that story. Joyce, what more can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. attended a program for the grand opening of a new terminal building here at the Clark International Airport in Mabalacat City, Pampanga. He led the ribbon cutting as well as the unveiling of the marker of the project with First Lady Liza Marcos as well as Tourism Secretary Cristina Frasco and Transportation Secretary Jaime Bautista. In his speech, he recognized the project as the perfect example of a good collaboration between the government and the private sector since this is a product of a public-private partnership deal. Marcos said that his administration is planning to pursue more projects such as this. In fact, he mentioned that in his recent trips abroad, he encouraged business groups and investors to collaborate with the Philippine government to mount such projects. He added that the administration has plans to improve and decongest the airport in Manila while boosting regional airports in Bohol, Cagayan de Oro, Cebu, and Davao. More direct domestic and international flights will be opened in these airports, he said. Marcos, however, was quick to admit that this is not a project of his administration, but nonetheless, he recognized how this can help the Philippine economy in general. The new terminal building was funded during the Aquino administration, but it was the Duterte government that constructed this. It was finished in 2020 and was partially operational on May 2022. The government boasts of its facilities and features, mainly the contactless system for self-check-in, flight selection, baggage check, and among others. The Department of Transportation said this new terminal building can accommodate 8 million passengers annually and will definitely help decongest Ninoy Aquino International Airport in Metro Manila. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Joyce Balancha, there joining us live. And back here in the newsroom, Senator Grace Poe, optimistic, President Marcos will sign the SIM card registration bill into law within the next 2 months. Both houses of Congress are expected to ratify the bill today. Poe, who sponsored the bill at the Senate, believes the measure will be useful. Crime-fighting tool for law enforcement agencies. She also assures the public there are provisions in the bill punishing telcos for possible mishandling of people's information.
The telco companies or the PTEs will be the repository of this information. And then the data officer will have to be registered with the National Privacy Commission. So not everybody will have access to that information to a level where it can compromise information that might be dangerous when given out or sold. So there are a few that will have access to it. And if there's a data breach, a company can be liable for every instance for about 4 million pesos.
The cell phone companies.
The cell phone company. Yeah. Now, yeah. If they say, should we trust the telco companies as opposed to government agencies? I think that the private companies have more to lose, in fact, if their system is compromised, because they lose the trust of their subscribers, and they will also be liable under the law for being negligent, perhaps. And this time, it's not just a blanket penalty for, let's say, one data breach. It's per data breach.
Senator Poe leaning towards the banning of Philippine offshore gaming operators in the country. For Poe, the social costs of having POGOs are higher than the economic gains they bring in.
Hindi naman kasi pwede na porket na kumikita tayo sa isang bagay, ayun na lang ang susuportahan natin. Isipin din natin, ano ang kapalit nito? Diba? We want an economy where businesses find it profitable to solve social problems. That's a quote that I read. Now, conversely, we want an economy where businesses don't cause social problems. When it comes to office spaces and the decrease in demand and also in pricing. Remember, this POGO industry has actually created also a premature price in the market. I think prices have been going up prematurely and pricing out legitimate businesses also, as well as legitimate renters.
There have been mounting calls to ban POGOs from the country amid the recent rise in kidnapping incidents involving Chinese POGO workers. In other news, a former official of Malacañang, now the new chairperson of the country's Human Rights Commission, Richard Palpalatok, was appointed to the post by President Marcos on September 15th. He will serve a full 7-year term from 2022 to 2029. Palpalatok previously served as Deputy Executive Secretary for Legal Affairs under the Office of the President. Aside from Palpalatok, Beda Angeles S. Epres was also named by President Marcos as his second appointee to the Human Rights Commission. Epres had served in the Office of the Ombudsman since 1997. He will serve as CHR Commissioner until year 2029. President Marcos still needs to appoint 3 other CHR Commissioners. International Criminal Court prosecutor Karim Khan rejects the Philippine government's arguments in seeking to stop the tribunal's probe into the drug war and Davao Death Squad killings. In a 21-page submission to the ICC pre-trial chamber, Khan again urged the chamber to order the resumption of the investigation. Manila had argued the ICC lacks jurisdiction to conduct the probe. It also claimed the Philippine government has investigated and prosecuted some of the alleged crimes, while the rest are still being probed. Khan, though, is unconvinced. He says the Philippines has failed to substantiate its claim. Its justice system is functioning well. The ICC pretrial chamber has yet to act on Khan's request. And we'll be speaking now with attorney Christina Conti. She represents some of the families in the drug war, or of the drug war victims. Attorney Conti is also Secretary General of the National Union of People's Lawyers in the National Capital Region. Attorney Conti, nice to see you again, and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Charmina.
All right, so we just heard ICC prosecutor Karim Khan there rejecting the Philippine government's request to stop the investigation into the drug war killings and the Davao Death Squad killings. What does that tell you?
It tells us that clearly the ICC is still intent and keen on pursuing this investigation. If there was any indication prior that they were moving towards Eastern Europe or they were looking at other situations, well, now it's clear that the Philippines still is a priority. It's very important for us as well because this is a policy that is ongoing. Take note that even with the change in administration, there seems to be no difference or no substantial differentiation between the policies of the two governments. So far, even in the President Marcos has indicated that he will be pursuing a different approach. Clearly, the people still in power who were part of the Tokhang implementation of the Duterte administration would come into a purview of this investigation.
You're talking about former Justice Secretary Minardo Guevara, now,
the
Solicitor General. How could how could he influence the policies of this administration regarding the drug war? And go ahead.
Sorry. What I meant was that in this investigation, they would fall within the ambit of an ICC investigation. What we're looking at for an ICC investigation is a look into every nook and cranny, if necessary, into government agencies, offices, and even officials who should have done something, could have done something, but not do anything, and as well as those who had committed acts. So acts of omission and acts of commission are both going to be within the ambit of this investigation. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is that Secretary Guevara, who was allegedly, or as he claimed, who reviewed 52 cases of killings, could also be interviewed or investigated by the ICC.
All right, let's set that aside for now and focus on the process. In terms of process, where does this leave now? This investigation into the Philippines' drug war and Davao Death Squad killings. Now that the ICC prosecutor Karim Khan has rejected this, what's the next step?
The next step is for the pre-trial chamber, which is a group of 3 judges, to decide whether the prosecutor, the OTP, it's the Office of the Prosecutor, can continue with the investigation. Mm-hmm. As soon as it gives the go signal, the authorization to proceed and resume the investigation, then the OTP can do so. after the investigation, we go back to the pretrial chamber. The OTP, the Office of the Prosecutor, will report on its findings as to who are the most responsible for crimes against humanity in the Philippines. Mm. And after that will come the exciting part. They would issue the a warrant of arrest, a confirmation of charges, and we proceed to trial proper.
Mm. Tell me something, Attorney Conti. Was there ever a case, whether recent or not, that there was a rejection of the explanation coming from a government and the ICC still proceeded with the investigation? And what happened to the case? Attorney Conti? Okay, I think we have we lost our signal there, or Attorney Conti has lost her signal. We're going to try and get her back online as soon as we can, because we still have a lot of issues to tackle with her. But in the meantime, let's move on with the rest of the news this noon. A labor group slams robbery charges filed against two activists. Last December, a Quezon City court issued an arrest warrant for labor leaders Cara Tagaoa and Hilary Valbuena for allegedly committing robbery. But Kilusang Maya Uno points out the move is questionable since there was no preliminary probe conducted before the filing of the complaint. The group suspects the case is in connection with a peaceful protest held in July of 2020.
This happened a long time ago, and it was just now that this complaint was being opened up to, in order to file a sudden complaint against our two mass leaders. So there wasn't any benefit of a preliminary investigation, and suddenly this case has sprung up after 2 years. So obviously they are trump up charges to limit the democratic space of the protesters then and now.
A stern warning issued by the Philippine Supreme Court to a former anti-insurgency official who threatened a Manila judge. The High Court says anyone inciting violence against judges and their families may be cited in contempt and dealt with accordingly. The court's warning issued after discussing possible actions to statements made by Lorraine Badoy. The former spokesperson of government's anti-insurgency task force had linked Manila court judge Marlo Magdosa Malagar to communist rebels. Badoy's allegations were in reaction to the judge's decision, which junked government's bid to declare the Communist Party of the Philippines and its armed wing, the New People's Army, as terrorists. In a now-deleted social media post, Badoy had asked people to be lenient with her if she kills the judge out of her political beliefs. The Philippine Commission on the Filipino Language voids its ban on allegedly subversive books. Adrian Ayalin tells us why.
The ban against five books earlier declared as subversive by some commissioners of the Komisyon sa Wikang Filipino is no longer in effect, according to the chairperson of the commission. In an earlier memorandum issued by KWF Commissioners Carmelita Abdurrahman and Benjamin Mendillo last August 9, the following titles were deemed subversive and anti-government: Teatro Politikal, Kalatas Mga Kwentong Bayan at Kwentong Buhay, Tawid Diwa sa Pananagisag ni Bienvenido Lumbera, May Hadlang Ang Umaga, and Labas Mga Palabas sa Labas ng Sentro. But according to KWF Chairperson Arthur Casanova, based on the September 20, 2022 resolution of the Commission, Commissioners Alain Ross Dimson, Hope Pew, and Angela Lorenzana have withdrawn their signatures from the statement of condemnation of the supposed illegal acts of the chairman, as well as the publication and proliferation of the supposed subversive books. In that statement, the books supposedly have anti-Marcos and anti-Duterte content, and the approval of the publication and distribution of the books by the commission's chairman is considered as an attack against the government. With the withdrawal of the three commissioners of their signatures, only Abdurrahman and Mendillo remain as signatories, as they put abstained in the withdrawal resolution.
Dahil sa pagbawi ng tatlong mga commissioner na kanilang mga lagda, ang aking pong interpretasyon dyan ay void na po or moot and academic na yung sinasabi nilang hindi paglilimba, hindi pagdidistribute, okay? At ang pagbawi sa mga aklat na nabanggit sa mga sidid aklatan.
Okay.
So wala na pong visa yon. Dahil nga po sa pagbawi ng lagda ng 3 sa 5 lumagda.
Casanova also emphasized that he does not unilaterally decide on the printing and distribution of books, which undergo a thorough process. For ACT Teachers Party List Representative Franz Castro, the 3 commissioners who withdrew their signatures did the right thing.
Ako ay natutuwa dahil nakita pa rin ng KWF, yung majority ng member ng komisyon, yung sinasabi natin na above all ay yung yung nakalagay sa ating constitution, academic freedom, freedom of speech, at saka yung freedom of expression na ginamit ng mga author doon sa kanilang mga libro na ipinublish.
Casanova also reiterated in their resolution that it is not the job of their commission to determine if a book is subversive or not.
Ang mga author po ay siyempre po hindi nagustuhan ang naunang kapasihan o resolusyon na ang mga aklat po nila ay naglalaman ng mga subversibo at kontra-gobyerno at pinatitigil po ang paglilimbag, ang distribution at pinahuhugot ang mga aklat na naibigay na po sa iba't ibang mga sidid aklatan. Siyempre po ay hindi maganda yon sa pangalan ng mga autor dahil ang mga autor po ng mga nabanggit na aklat na 5 ay mga award-winning writers po yan, mga ikinagalang ng mga manunulat.
Inaano natin yung budget nila, no? Binubusisi natin yung budget nila. Isa sa pinoint out natin yan na hindi ito yung mandato ng KWF. Yung i-determine kung subversibo o hindi yung libro at saka meron naman na tayong meron naman na tayong appropriate siguro na ahensya para mag-determine yan. At sabi ko nga, dapat hindi nagpapa-impluwensya ang KWF doon sa NTFL.
ABS-CBN tried to get the side of Mendilio, but he has yet to respond to our calls and texts. Adrian Ayalin, ABS-CBN News.
And we have her back. We're now joined again by attorney Christina Conti. She represents some of the families in the drug war of the Duterte administration. Attorney Conti, nice to have you back online.
Yes.
All right. Okay, so to the point that we were discussing a while ago, if there has been any case to your knowledge wherein a state, a government has forwarded their position to the ICC, that the courts are fully functioning and that the ICC still conducted their investigation. Do you have any knowledge of any country? Go ahead.
Well, I have two things about this. First, we're no longer a member of the ICC, so there is no absolute compulsion to participate in the investigations. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. And then on another note, we have the recent case of Afghanistan, which this is a negative example, though. In Afghanistan, the government there said that they can take on the investigation, and the ICC stepped back in that situation. For other cases, majority of them in Africa, there has been a clear finding that the courts there are unwilling and unable to investigate these kinds of crimes against humanity. I would say that it would be similar to what has happened here in the Philippines. Even if the states have said that they would like to take on the investigation, it's the ICC who still has jurisdiction over a different kind of crime that could have been prosecuted in the national or domestic state. The ICC still has jurisdiction over crimes against humanity. This is a special classification of crimes.
Mm-hmm. All right, but to the point that you raised a while ago, to the admission that it's going to cause a problem, given that we're no longer a member of the ICC, how's that going to complicate things now for the Philippines? Or for the ICC, for that matter? Go ahead.
It complicates things during the investigation, because if the state no longer wants to cooperate and give and submit the documents that are necessary, or to give access to agencies or to people, officials who might be necessary to investigate or talk to during this stage, then it would be hard to get the information. However, again, as I've said, time and again, it's the civil society organizations and the victims themselves who are able to give these documents, who are willing to go to the court and submit all these records themselves.
Mm-hmm. But then we go back to the Philippines not being a member of the ICC anymore. So whatever, if it even reaches that point, whatever verdict may be handed down, how's that going to be implemented, considering we're not members already? Go ahead.
I see this point. So here's the thing. During the investigation, we have to investigate anybody and everybody who might have had participation in the policy, but during the hearing, during the trial, you're going to determine who are most responsible. And that means you're going to sue people. In our case, for our organization, that would include President Duterte as among the most responsible for these crimes against humanity. When they stand trial as individuals, as private personalities.
Mm. No. But this doesn't prevent this administration, whether or not we're still members of the ICC, this should not prevent this administration from investigating these killings, correct?
Well, that's right. The problem is they are not investigating. And from what you've seen, they said they will be investigating, but from the records, if you review, it cannot be the kind of investigation that will just bump out an ICC investigation about crimes against humanity. As it seems, it has been a desk review of individual or isolated incidents. It's not a review of policy. And that's what's necessary to bump out or to take out from the table an ICC investigation or international investigation. Mm-hmm.
Attorney Conti, you're a practicing lawyer, correct?
Yes.
And how many cases are you handling right now that are alive that you're currently going to courts to and defending your clients?
I will backtrack. We had 6 cases filed as of 2017-2018. Only 3 were approved. Well, these are murder cases or counter charges or talk crime cases. Only 3 were approved for trial, and right now there's only 1 in court. Mm. We'll be facing the policemen for the first hearing on their defense in October. And I'm excited for this because this might be the first of only a handful of cases of murder charges against the policemen for these Tokhan hearings. Mm-hmm. Imagine this is 1 out of 6,252 cases of admitted police killings in their own operations.
Outside of this case, though, do you have any other cases that you're handling?
No. Unfortunately, outside of these cases, I know there are other organizations that are handling. But
not particularly I'm sorry, Attorney Conti, not particularly involving the drug war, but other cases of any nature. Would you have that as well?
For myself?
Yes.
Oh, I'm handling more than 100 cases right now of civil and criminal cases, also involving drug-related policy and political prisoners.
Wouldn't that show you, Attorney Conti, that the justice system is functioning here in the country?
Well, that's right. The justice system is functioning. But the problem is the cases are not going to court by themselves. There has to be someone to move the 6,252 cases to the courts. And from the looks of it, from what we can do, we've only forwarded 6. The DOJ has already forwarded 2. How about the 6,000 others? So there is no systematic or a clear system for all of these investigations or accountability mechanisms.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Attorney Cristina Conti there, human rights lawyer, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you,
really appreciate it.
Thanks,
you too. All right, from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, another storm develops outside the Philippines as the real scale of Typhoon Karding's wrath continues to unfold. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The peso continuing its downward spiral, touching a new intraday low of 59 to the greenback. DC prosecutor Karim Khan pushes for the resumption of the ICC's probe into the drug war killings in the Philippines. The camp of the victims' families lauds the move. And a new storm developing outside of Luzon, parts of which still reeling from Typhoon Karding. Back with more news, Senator Risa Ontiveros calls on the Commission on Higher Education to investigate reports of so-called ghost scholars. Ontiveros reveals she received complaints. Some students who already graduated are still included in CHED's scholarship program. Ontiveros adds, while tuition reimbursements have already been given out to these ghost scholars, hundreds of students are still waiting for their own education subsidy. Death toll from Typhoon Karding has now risen to 10. Our correspondent Bianca Dava now joins us for more on that. Bianca, go ahead.
Carmina, two more fatalities were recorded from the onslaught of Super Typhoon Karding, bringing the death toll to 10. The new fatalities were reported in Baliwag, Bulacan and Tanay, Rizal, with both of the victims dying due to drowning, according to NDRRMC spokesperson Rafi Alejandro. But Alejandro added, the numbers are still up for verification. The number of missing has meanwhile reached 8. These include the 5 fishermen in Mercedes Camarines Norte, 2 more individuals in Antipolo Rizal, and another in Quezon Province. Damage to public infrastructure due to Karding has reached over 23 million pesos, according to the NDRRMC. In its 8 a.m. situational report on Wednesday, the NDRRMC said damage to roads and bridges in Ilocos Region, Mimaropa, and Cordillera Administrative Region account for majority of the affected structures. Car incurred the biggest damage at 19.6 million pesos. Mimaropa had 3 million pesos in infrastructure damage and Region 1 at 450,000 pesos. However, other areas have yet to fully assess the damage as relief and clearing operations are currently the main focus of operations. Affected houses across regions in Luzon are more than 3,000 with 2,400 partially damaged and we have some 630 totally destroyed. Now close to 40,000 families or 157,000 individuals were affected by the onslaught of Karding, of which a total of 8,825 families are still remaining in evacuation centers. The NDRRMC also reported that more than 5.5 million pesos worth of assistance was already provided to affected individuals, and the aid consisted of food family packs, hot meals, and financial assistance, among others. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Bianca Dava there joining us on the line. Take care, Bianca, and you keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, the Social Welfare Department has begun distributing relief packs in typhoon-ravaged Polillo in Quezon Province. Reynel Pawid now joins us with details. Reynel, over to you.
Carmina, the distribution of relief packs and financial assistance has begun to 470 families here in Polillo, Quezon, that were devastated by Typhoon Karding. Senator Bong Revilla also came this morning to inspect the damaged infrastructure in the town. Carmina, the construction of a seawall in coastal barangay are also being studied, according to the local government of Polillo. The cost of damage to their fishery sector reached 3 million pesos before assured that they will immediately provide repair materials to the affected fisher folks. Carmina and the entire Quezon province, 5,000 houses have been destroyed and over 186 million pesos has been accounted for damage and losses in agriculture sector. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Reynel Pawid. And back here in the newsroom, the National Irrigation Administration defends its decision to release water from Magat Dam. Its administrator, Benny Antiporta, points out it was done ahead of Typhoon Karding's landfall. Antiporta says it is part of the revised protocols aimed at preventing worse flooding.
We started early. As early as Saturday, nakahanda na po tayo. yung ating tubig eh, nagbawas na po tayo kagad, no? Especially on the Magat Dam wherein tuwing magkakaroon ng bagyo, ito po yung napagbibintangan na nagiging dahilan ng pagbaha. Nagpakawala po tayo ng tubig na 1 meter lang po yung binuksan natin sa ating gate doon. Hindi na po natin kailangan pang magbukas pa ng isang gate uli. Mm-hmm. So dito po, nakontrol natin yung takbo ng tubig na hindi na po nagbaha. Mm-hmm. Yung sa tuwing magkakaroon po ng bagyo, dito po sa may Aurora, Isabela, eh hindi na po nagbaha.
The low-pressure area off extreme northern Luzon has developed into a tropical depression. Let's get more details now from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas. Ariel.
Good afternoon, Carmina. The low-pressure area that entered the Philippine area of responsibility 6 p.m. last night developed into a tropical depression and was assigned the local name Luis. It was last spotted 1,100 kilometers east of extreme northern Luzon with maximum winds of 55 kilometers per hour and gusts up to 70 kilometers per hour. It is moving northwestward at a speed of 25 kilometers per hour. The good news is Tropical Depression Luis will neither make landfall over nor affect the weather in the country, and it may leave the Philippine area of responsibility tomorrow morning. However, another low pressure area is being monitored, located 445 kilometers east of Diwan, Eastern Samar. Pagasa says this disturbance will dissipate within 24 to 48 hours. However, today it will bring moderate to heavy rains in Eastern Visayas, Caraga, and Davao region. On the other hand, the southwest monsoon or Habagat will also bring scattered rains over Occidental Mindoro, Palawan, and Western and Central Visayas. Intense thunderstorms will also form this afternoon in Ilocos Region, Cordillera, Central Luzon, Cavite, Batangas, Northern Mindanao, and Sokcergen. Metro Manila will have sunny breaks but will also experience thunderstorms this afternoon and evening. In the coming days, the Habagat will withdraw to the West Philippine Sea and the warm easterlies will take over. That's the latest on the weather. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel Rojas there. Back here in the newsroom, after barreling through the Philippines, Typhoon Noru makes landfall in Vietnam, bringing heavy rains and damaging winds. In Da Nang, Vietnam's third largest city, high-rise buildings shook in the strong gusts of wind that toppled trees and tore roofs off homes. Large-scale power outages have also been reported. Wind speeds were slower than initially feared, but forecasters say heavy rain could trigger landslides and flooding. Vietnam evacuated hundreds of thousands of people ahead of Noru's arrival. Almost half of Vietnam's airports have been shut and schools and offices closed across several central provinces. On the other side of the world now, another cyclone threatens to bring destruction. More than 2.5 million people in Florida are under evacuation orders as Hurricane Ian draws near. On its path toward Florida, Ian barreled through the Caribbean, hitting Cuba and forcing mass evacuations. It also left thousands across the island nation without power. Ian is churning towards Florida as a Category 3 storm, packing winds of 195 kilometers per hour. Residents in the Sunshine State are now urged to get to higher ground, with authorities warning of potentially deadly storm surges. Severe flooding also on the forecast. Scientists in China sound the alarm over the growing threat of the Omicron subvariant BA2.75.2. That variant, which has been dubbed as Centaurus, is now seen as the COVID strain most capable of evading immunity from vaccination or previous infection. A group of researchers from London and Cape Town said the BA2.75.2 is 6 times more difficult to neutralize than the dominant BA5 subvariant. The World Health Organization says it is continuously monitoring this strain. Here at home, the Philippines logged over 1,500 new COVID-19 cases Tuesday. This raises the number of active infections to 38,315, the highest in more than a month or since August 15. 30 coronavirus-related deaths were also recorded. The health department also said 1,400 additional cases of highly contagious offshoots of the Omicron COVID-19 variant have been detected in the country. Barely a month since the Philippines allowed the optional use of face masks outdoors, a medical group is calling on government to reverse its decision. The Private Hospitals Association of the Philippines made the appeal amid rising COVID-19 cases. The group's president, Dr. Rene De Grano, says while it is unclear whether the relaxed rule is driving up cases, using face masks even in well-ventilated areas remains effective in preventing new infections.
Alam niyo po, kahit po nasa labas tayo, maganda ang ventilation, pero hindi po natin tayo, hindi tayo nakakasiguro kung sino ang ating nakakasalamuhan, ating ng mga nakakasalubong, na maaari pong kahit wala silang nararamdaman o wala silang simptomas, ay posible pong nagpa-positive ang mga yan. At pwede pong masagap natin, and then maikalat po natin pag umuwi tayo sa ating mga
Bye. Speaking to media on Tuesday, Acting Health Secretary Maria Rosario Vergere asserted there are many factors affecting the rise in COVID-19 cases. Vergere, however, assures the public government itself will make the call to resume outdoor masking if the situation calls for it. The Land Transportation Franchising and Regulatory Board, or LTFRB, commits to opening all pre-pandemic routes in Metro Manila to public utility vehicles before the year ends. In the budget hearing of the Transportation Department, Agri Party List Representative Wilbert Lee suggested opening up more POV routes to ease the burden of commuters. Valenzuela Representative Eric Martinez says they will press the LTFRB to do this by December.
We would really appeal to the sensitivities of LTFRB na sana yung mga prangkisa mabuksan nila bago ma-open nila bago mag-December. And we all know what December means to all of us.
Many POV routes were suspended at the start of the pandemic in March of 2020 to control the spread of the virus. Meanwhile, lawmakers flagged the slow budget utilization for some projects of the Transportation Department. One rider party list representative, Ramon Gutierrez, says only 2% of tricycle drivers have so far received fuel subsidies under the agency's Pantawid Pasada program. Gutierrez now calls on the agency to speed up and ensure equitable distribution of aid.
It's just very bewildering to see that on the component for tricycle drivers, we were only at 2%. Moving forward, we will be refining this process.
The issues of the past have been noted by DOTR. So with this circular, we will be able to hasten and cure those possible issues that might arise again. So we join you in those in the vigilance of doing such distribution, given the 2% figure for our tricycles.
An urban transport planner hits the LTFRB's policy, which allows standing passengers inside buses and modern jeepneys. Julius Dale says that move seems to mask a bigger problem, the lack of an efficient public transportation system in Metro Manila. He also points out passengers have long been forced to stand while commuting because a number of PUVs, well, they're just not enough.
Yung pronouncement ng LTFRB, formality na lang yun. Even nung nagbalik dun sa pandemic yung mga tao, dahil sa kulangan, nagtatayuan na sa jeep yan, sa mga bus yan. Kasi nga, kulang yung supply. So, at the end of the day, yung mga commuter na rin nagmamakaawa, we need to augment the supply. Yung supply na yun can be defined as mas maraming bus or yung mas mabilis na turnover ng bus.
The LTFRB recently allowed 10 to 15 standing passengers inside buses and modern jeepneys in areas under Alert Level 1. It said the move was meant to make the most out of spaces in PUVs. ABS-CBN News Chief Jing Reyes has been named the 2022 Southeast Asia Laureate for the Wanifria Women in News Editorial Leadership Award. The award recognizes Reyes's exceptional contribution to the newsroom, editorial integrity, and outstanding leadership. The award will be given on Thursday during the annual World News Media Congress taking place now in Zaragoza in Spain. Reyes, who has been with the network since the 80s, is leading its news division, navigate through the challenges of the pandemic and the loss of the network's legislative franchise. Congratulations, Jing. In entertainment, an American TV series continues to champion inclusivity as it drops a new episode centered around Filipino characters. Yong Chavez tells us more about The Cleaning Lady.
Mistakes that she's made in the past affect her.
To play Fiona, an immigrant from the Philippines in The Cleaning Lady, Filipino-Australian actress Martha Milan says two people have helped her in a big way.
My parents are both invested in the show so much, and the way that they can actually contribute by translating. Awesome. Even if it's 3 a.m. in the morning on Zoom, I'd be like, guys, wake up. Is this right? Is this the right way to say it? And then they would do a whole kind of debate of like, no, hindi yan, pero hindi. I'm just like, guys, just give me the simplification. We need to go on set now. And it was wonderful.
The series tells the story of Filipinos in Las Vegas who are dealing with the challenges of being undocumented while doing difficult jobs to raise their families. The show is a first of its kind in Hollywood primetime TV for its constant inclusion of Filipino talents in front of the cameras as well as in the writer's room, directors, producer, and even music by Ruby Ibarra.
What does it mean to you to represent and play this character and have it be on network TV?
I mean, it means everything to me, y'all. I think, like, you know, it's the first time that a Filipino is being, you know, at the forefront of the show as well and being portrayed in a way that's humanized. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, we are cleaning ladies and the stereotype is there, but I think by watching the show, you realize that it's an authentic way to tell the story of marginalized voices in the way that we're all the same. We all go through these things. We're not just, you know, coming on and cleaning things and then we go home to bed. We're dealing with, obviously the show has extraordinary situations that we're dealing with, but I think just the day-to-day life of Fiona and Tony and the kids and the family, they're all, you know, based on family values.
Its most recent episode, titled Lolo and Lola, also features actress Princess Punsalan in her U.S. network TV debut. Punsalan and Alberto Isaac play Milan's parents who visited from the Philippines due to an urgent family situation.
There is so much humility and she's just so down to earth in every way and just giving as an actor as well that it was playing off of her was so easy and to believe that she was my mother. It was great.
Most of Fiona's scenes are with her sister-in-law, Tony, played by the show star Elodie Young. The series depicts the supportive relationships of many Filipino sisters-in-law, something that hasn't been explored before in any other Hollywood stories. Yong Chavez, ABS-CBN News, here in Hollywood.
And before we go, Hollywood hunk Hugh Jackman will return to his iconic role of Wolverine in the next Deadpool film. Deadpool star Ryan Reynolds announced Jackman's involvement in the movie in a video on Twitter. The film is slated for release in September 2024. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.